Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Our next guest may say that you can actually literally make time stand still. We will find out. She does ask, is the sky really blue? Can we change our sense of taste with a single word? Can we experience more than five senses? This may all sound like science fiction, but our next guest is here to tell us that everything that we see, taste, or experience on any level is just a construct of our brains, and as a result, can be, as she says, biohacked. Journalist and teacher at the UC Berkeley School of Journalism, Cara Platone, traveled the world to find out how humans are pushing the limits of our perceptual capabilities in intentional and unintentional ways. And she takes us on a fascinating tour in her new book, We Have the Technology, How Biohackers, Foodies, Physicians, and Scientists Are Transforming Human Perception One Sense at a Time. Welcome to WNYC, Cara Platone.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me on the show.
And I see you start out the book with a description of people who call themselves grinders, who take the idea of pushing perceptual capabilities to the extreme in a very mad scientist sort of way by actually altering their bodies. Can you give us an example?
Sure. So the group that I spent the most time with is a group called Grindhouse Wetware. And when I met them, they were just at the very beginning of a project that they wanted to do to see if they could give themselves essentially a magnetic compass that they wanted to insert into their hand. They called it the North Star. And the idea was lots of other animals are able to use magnetoreception to navigate. Birds can do it, bats can do it, even butterflies and bacteria can do it. Why can't people do it? And they were kind of so frustrated by the fact that the human body already doesn't have this apparatus that they decided they're going to build it themselves. So while I was there 2 years ago, they had just started building this implant in their basement. And they had, in fact, at the time, just finished a different implant called the Circadia, which they had inserted into Tim Cannon's arm. Tim is their founder and fearless leader, and it was able to draw, it was able to read his temperature while it was in his body and port that data to his cell phone.
Well, that doesn't change your life. What else does it do?
Well, to be honest, that first project was to figure out if they could safely do an implant and not kill Tim. Not killing Tim was very, very important. So they wanted to test a bunch of things like how long could they charge a device inside the body? Could they safely do an implant? And this implant was pretty big. It was about the size of a deck of cards. Could they put it in his body without it getting really infected?
Now, if you can charge your phone without finding an outlet, that does change your life.
The whole thing that the grinders and biohackers really care about is this idea of limits, of surpassing human limits. You know, we only have five senses. We have touch, taste, smell, sight, hearing. And they say, why not more? There's so much information in the universe that we're missing. We miss gamma waves. We can't see infrared. We can't sense electricity like sharks can. Why not? Why must we live in this small, dark universe? Why can't we engineer something better?
And is there something having to do with changing people's looks that the magnetic implants have to do with?
No, I don't think so. I think most of the people... So just to explain for people who haven't heard about this before, there are some biohackers out there who've gotten small magnets implanted in their fingertips, usually, sometimes in other parts of the hand. It's in a bid to get that electromagnetic reception.
And how close to a sixth sense has anybody gotten, and how would you describe that sixth sense?
Well, so a lot of people who have these things say, yeah, I can feel something. Life is different than before I had the magnet. They say, I can feel when the microwave is running. I can feel when I put my hand next to the hard drive on my computer. Of course, I can feel hidden, you know, a stapler in paper, a wire in the wall, and all of these things. Now, the big question is, have they actually given themselves a true magnetic sense the way a bird or a butterfly would have? or is it something else? And I don't want to give away the end of the book, Brian, but in it I raise a hypothesis, and it was now there is, of course, no expert you can call to say what happens when you put a magnet in your finger. Do you really give yourself a magnetic reception? Mm-hmm. But I raise a hypothesis that passed muster with all of the biohackers of my acquaintance, and also a bunch of neuroscientists who were quite shocked to find out that people were doing this. So so you'll all see. Right. I think there is a rational explanation for what's going on.
So even a nonfiction book can be subject to spoilers, as we're learning from Cara Platone, the author now of We Have the Technology, How Biohackers, Foodies, Physicians, and Scientists Are Transforming Human Perception One Sense at a Time. Do we have any grinders out there right now? Anybody who's been experimenting with any of this, or anybody else with a question? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. I'm sure at least some people are wondering how foodies got on that list in your subtitle. So in your chapter on taste, I see you visit labs where scientists are testing whether or not people have a sixth primary taste outside of the standard bitter, salty, sweet, sour, and the one called umami. Where do you start?
All right. Well, so first of all, let me say there are definitely lots of robots, implants, computers, other kinds of high-tech devices in this book. But technology isn't just electronics. In my view, personally, technology is any tool that people have made. So some of the other things that I explore in this book are, for example, the idea of medicine as a technology. I have a chapter about pain, and people who are looking into whether acetaminophen, which is the generic for Tylenol, can be used on heartbreak, not just on physical aches and pains. And one of the other things that I look at is perfume. The idea of chemical technology. I go to a hospital in France where perfumers are using scent as a way to help people with Alzheimer's recover and talk about memories. So in the chapter about taste, I speak about language as a technology. The idea that having a word for something, a concept in your brain, a percept for it, helps you actually sense it. So right now we've got five basic tastes, the ones you just listed. But if you, like me, went to school in the last century, elementary school in the last century, you remember that there were only four. There was only sweet, sour, salty, and bitter. And then this idea of umami or savory came along. Well, that opened up this huge quest for food scientists, right? If there could be five, why not six or seven or thousands, right? So right now, scientists are trying to figure out what number six might be. And for my book, I kind of put myself on this quest to go to all of these labs and kitchens where people were looking at various contenders. One of them is fat. And the argument there is we need fat. Our bodies have to have fat. There should be some way for us to sense it in our diet to be able to eat it. Another contender is calcium. People have argued for water having a taste, even carbon dioxide having a unique taste that's separate from the feel of bubbles. But the problem is, how are you going to describe this thing? How do you know what you're tasting if you don't have a word for it or an idea already in your mind? And that's a really interesting and wild idea, that your language might limit what you can sense.
If we develop a taste for carbon dioxide, could we eat our way to the end of the climate crisis?
Maybe you'd have, that is a really good question. I mean, why not? Let's try.
So what would it be like? I mean, this taste for fat, that's different than our craving for ice cream or steak or a taste for calcium. I mean, can you describe at all what it would taste like, or is it too much in the formative stages?
Well, I've tried them both, and one of the first things I did to report this book is that I went to Denver to their Museum of Nature and Science, and they are doing this cool public experiment in trying to figure out if people can taste fat. So you go into their lab, and they give you these little gel wafers that are kind of like if you've ever used one of those melt-away breath strips that taste like mint, it's like that, but instead of mintiness, in it, it has fat. It has linoleic acid. And the idea is that they give you this these wafers that have different amounts of the fat in it, and then you taste it, and then you kind of rate how intense the taste is, and then you try to come up with words to describe what it's like, and it is really hard. The first time I tried it, the words I kept coming up with were bitter and acid, but those are already two basic tastes. And I can tell you, in my experience anyway, it was kind of like shoe polish or varnish or suitcase leather. It had this really astringent kind of plasticky quality to it.
Yum.
But that's not what everybody else has tasted. People have had this wide range of reactions. There are people who've said it tastes like bricks, like it tastes like stamp books, it tastes like gummy bears. And that's the trick. Putting a word on it is really hard. I tasted calcium, too. I went to the Monell Chemical Senses Center, which is a research lab where they're investigating calcium as a sixth taste.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought it would taste like Perrier or something like that, but it's much worse than Perrier.
And of course, none of this will be developed if there aren't yummy commercial applications, but that's another show. Before we take some phone calls, and people are calling in with questions and experiences and things, you might have heard just before you came on, we did a promo for this Time Stood Still project we're doing with our listeners, where we're inviting people to record on their voice apps on their phones and send to us a little story about a time in their life when it felt to them like time stood still. So along come you and your book, and you're actually right that our perception of time can also be changed, hacked, in effect, with new technology. Tell us how, with respect to time, and can anybody make time stand still?
Well, you know, there actually is a lab that has tried to test whether or not time stands still when you're in a traumatic or fearful moment. David Eagleman, who is a neuroscientist at the Baylor College of Medicine, he and his student, Chess Stetson, did this wild experiment where they gave people a device that they wore on their wrist, and it flashed numbers at them. And their idea was, if you're looking at this thing in a fearful situation, and if time actually slows down, you should be able to read the numbers better than somebody who's just looking at this thing while standing on the ground. So they took people up to the top of a tower, one of those amusement park rides where they put you in a harness and you fall off the tower, and they had them fall off the tower while looking at their wrist. And the result, I am sad to say, is that people were not any better at picking out the numbers while they were falling through space than they were while standing on the ground.
I'm glad we solved that one.
But they did say the experience felt long. They asked people how long they thought they were falling and compared it to how long they actually fell. And the experience felt longer than it actually was. So it's actually your perception that warps, not time.
So those are tests of people's actual experiences. How about hacking our sense of time and altering it?
All right. So for this chapter, I wrote about a very special clock, because there is a group out here in San Francisco called the Long Now Foundation, and they are building the 10,000-year clock. And this is an experiment in seeing if we can alter people's perception of time. In other words, to get people to think about the far future and less about the needs of the present. So they're building this amazing giant clock that is going to be, it's going to live in a giant shaft that has been bored through a mountain in Texas, out in a remote part of Texas. And the idea is to build something that will last the length of a civilization, 10,000 years. And they're using this clock project as a way to encourage people to think about the deep future, about a time when we're not around, about a time when humanity, life on Earth, may have totally changed. And that is a really, really cool and interesting idea. But it turns out that is not the first way that we've hacked time. We do it actually all the time when we use clocks, which are an artificial man-made device that we've used to synchronize our actions so that we can all kind of exist in the world together, that we can work on the same time scale, get paid on the same time scale, travel between cities, and time is constant. It's not like I drive over to the next city and it's 3 hours later there. And one of the great examples of this is the atomic clock, which is it is operated by the government, and it is the way we standardize time for everybody. So basically, in this chapter, I went out and I learned about these two very special clocks and how they're designed to change your thinking and your behavior about time.
If you're just joining us in the middle of this conversation, we are not talking about the paranormal. We are talking about science with UC Berkeley journalism professor Cara Platone, who has written a book called We Have the Technology, How Biohackers, Foodies, Physicians, and Scientists are Transforming Human Perception One Sense at a Time. And so if you have a question or an experience to share, 212-433-WNYC. And here is a Dr. Pearl in Lido Beach. Dr. Pearl, you're on WNYC.
Hi there. Okay, well, I am a psychoanalyst and a poet and a writer. Now, that's sort of an odd trilogy for a tin hat person, given what I'm going to ask. Have you experienced or have you knowledge of folks that have a natural electromagnetic perception? Because for the longest time, I'm fascinated by this because I'm extremely sensitive to cell phones, to computers, to the point that if I'm working too long, this is where I sit, it sounds a little bit like tin hat syndrome. If I'm working for too long, I might have to really take my hands off the keyboard. I can feel the energy is sounding stranger and stranger, but it's actually a very, very real sense. And that's just been part of me for the longest time. I've been trying to figure out a way maybe to
You think you might have naturally what the people who Kara's writing about were trying to cultivate in themselves with those implants, a sixth sense that relates to magnetism.
Yes. And then I also have always wondered about, you know, because of the field that I'm in, and I've always wondered if people who are sort of trying to protect themselves from something, and it's sort of a very specific kind of sense that people report, if indeed they are feeling, experiencing something else that's real, another sense.
Kara, is this familiar at all to you as a pre-existing experience?
Well, I have to say, I did look into to see whether or not there had been any experiments in human magnetoreception, and I have to say, there really haven't been. There was a researcher in England who tried in the 80s, but no one was ever able to replicate his work. And I should say that the kinds of magnetoreception that we see in animals are very different than what you're describing. Most animals use it to navigate. They're migratory animals, and so they're using it to figure out which direction to head when they have to fly south for the winter, swim up the stream to spawn. So it's a very different thing in animals.
Good luck, Dr. Pearl. Thank you for calling and sharing your experience. All right, we don't have much time, so which of these stories would you like to hear? Somebody describing using magnets for healing purposes, or students attempting to graft human skin onto trees, or somebody saying she can taste fat as it is and sense how many calories are in food. Which of those intrigues you the most?
Oh, wow. Let's go with grafting skin onto trees, because that is wild and I've never heard of it before.
Nancy in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Guest's choice, Nancy, you're it.
Well, we were invited as Americans to attend an alternative science experimentation kind of group. And when we got there, almost everybody, we were over 50, almost everybody there was under 30. And there was this one experiment that they had been working on for many years. It was a teenagers into 20s that had made, I don't know where they got the skin. It kind of made me back up a little bit, but they had been trying to graft human skin onto specific kind of trees.
Why?
Because it came into their mind and they were going to try it.
To protect,
wow.
To enhance the resistance of the trees to disease or something like that?
I tried very hard to understand their mentality. I tried very hard to go where they were going. It was very difficult because, my questions were, well, where did you get the human skin? And it just started there.
Right.
And they were more interested in just not the ending, but the possibility.
Possibility. I don't know if this is related to CRISPR, which we talked about on the show the other week, which is kind of a DNA splicing technology that people think, for better or for worse, might be able to lead to hybrid species. But give us the last word, Carrie, you can react to Nancy or tell us where you think or hope this study of a quest for sixth and seventh and additional senses might go.
Yeah, all right. Well, I think actually all of your callers kind of are hitting at the same point, which is we're a hacker species, you know? We are a technological species. We like to make stuff and change stuff. And for some of us, it's kind of frustrating that our bodies can only do so much, that our minds can only do so much, and we always wonder, what else is out there? What else could I do? And I think that's really cool and interesting thing, you know, that we want to not just do more, but experience more.
Cara Platone, her new book is We Have the Technology, How Biohackers, Foodies, Physicians, and Scientists Are Transforming Human Perception One Sense at a Time. Thank you very much. Very intriguing.
Thanks, Brian. It's been fun.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Congressman Joe Crowley next. Stay with us.